McMonagle here with you on The Fan on this Wednesday morning. We'll take you for 3 hours. You know how it works. Got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show, 877-337-6666. We got Fliegelman on the other side, and we're taking your phone calls till then, and we are still basking in the glow of what is becoming the Garden Party. As four consecutive nights, four straight victories, the Rangers and the Knicks, we know the heroics of last night. Who cares about the two-minute report? We knew there was some tugging on the jerseys. We knew it. We knew there might have been a foul or two. No one cares. Stop crying, Philadelphia. It's 2-0 for the New York Knicks, and now it is 2-0 for the New York Rangers as they take care of the Capitals. And now, I mean, it's starting to feel, especially, you know, the thing about this win for the Rangers is I'm big on this. I say this a lot. If you listen to me, if you're a fan, I talk about the idea a lot of strengths being your strengths in the big moment. And if you look at these two series from these two teams that we've had as high expectations for as we have had in years, I mean, years, decades. It's the first time since 94 they've both won 50 games heading into the playoffs. Knicks are obviously the two seed. Rangers, the number one overall seed, President Trophy winner. Most points in the NHL. High expectations going against, you know, what's considered the worst playoff team in the East this year by far, and one of the worst playoff teams that have gotten in a long time, despite being a team that's got some, you know, big-time players, and Ovechkin, who's done nothing in these first two games, and having a little bit of a track record with some of the with Oshie and obviously Tom Wilson. But what I like about these two series, and then we'll get into specifically with the Rangers, is I'm big on strengths being strengths and overcoming weaknesses, and that's kind of like the idea that the Knicks have overcome in the first two games their strength not being there is big for me. If you can win without your strength, without your superstar playing well, without Brunson being the leader of this team, getting it from your other places, which is part of your strength too, the role players of this team. But to get through these two games against the team that's had the two best players in the series by far, and to still be up 2-0, that's a major positive moving forward because you expect your strength to be your strength. Now, it can quickly become, well, now you have a problem because your team is no longer and your strengths are no longer what you thought them to be if Brunson continues to struggle. But so far, I'm not concerned about that. And with this Ranger game last night, and now their strengths have been the special teams, the power play and the penalty kill, as they are one of the best teams in all the NHL with it. We know that the struggles they've had 5-on-5, right? The top line, you know, Zibanejad, who is the star of this game and had an incredible game, has the down season. Panarin having a great season, being more aggressive, shooting the puck. But ultimately, this team, the fears were that in the postseason, which we've seen time and time again with this Ranger team over, you know, going back since 2012, when really this great run of consistent, you know, with maybe a couple years in the middle of taking off, but this consistent run of playoff runs after playoff runs after playoff runs, we see a couple of things. We see hard-fought games, goals are tight to come by, and we see these long knock-em-out, drag-em-out series. But this team in particular, so good at the power play, and some of the numbers, despite the idea of being the best team in the NHL, and having the President's Trophy, so many numbers inside the NHL and so many different pundits telling you, well, their numbers 5-on-5 are so poor, it's so unique to have a team with this many points and this kind of record, struggling to score goals at even strength. And you knew, and the fears of this team were, that they were going to, if the power play runs dry, how do they still win? And for me, having that strength be there out the gate, and I know it's against the lesser opponent. But you see what's going on here. You see what Wilson's trying to do. You see what Oshie's trying to do, trying to intimidate the bread man, intimidate Panarin. You got Tom Wilson elbowing Cooley in the face. Like, they're trying to bring this thing down. But to watch this team and the power play be this dynamic and have them withhold the early onslaught of Washington, and going into the game, like we talked about it, it looked like Washington was dead in game one. And you weren't sure how they were going to be able to score. They score one goal, it goes off two skates, gets past Igor, who's played well in these first two games. And your thought process is, well, how does this team even compete? This team is too old, it's too slow, it's too tired, it's too this, it's too that, the Rangers are too good. And they come out flying. They come out flying in this game, and the Rangers are a little bit on their heels, and they have to overcome an early goal. And they get right back into it, and then you see the power play and the penalty kill, and the shorthanded goal in particular was just a thing of beauty. The passing, the skill, the precision of this Rangers team, they are just far better than Washington. And yes, it ends up being a tight game, 4-3, and the final minutes of this game, if you go back and listen to it too, it's one of, like, Sam is so out of breath trying to call the damn thing that it's amazing to me that he got through it. It was almost anticlimactic, because it was so long and so persistent, and they couldn't clear the puck. But ultimately, as tight as the final score might have been, this Ranger team is just far better than Washington. It's just far better. And when your strengths shine through, and the team they've been in the regular season, and we know what Panarin's been. We know, even though Zibanejad has had a struggle at times this year, how talented he is, how good they are on the penalty kill, sets up the shorthanded goal, how good they are on the power play, how dynamic it is, how quick the puck moves. And for them to be the team that we've seen in the regular season and dominate this hockey game and win these two first games, setting up for a short series, which I can't tell you how imperative it is. And as the Rangers, unfortunately for Islander fans, look to get ready to take on the Carolina Hurricanes, who are favored to win the whole thing, who are a very difficult team, who present a major challenge for the New York Rangers. They need to get through this series quickly and to not have one of those, because we've seen it time and time again throughout the history of this Rangers team in recent memory in the playoffs. Win game one, lose game two. Win game one, lose game two. Win game three, lose game four. And even if they're a better team, even if you've never felt like they don't have control of the series, and even if you were confident the whole way through, it became this internal and external battle against an inferior opponent. And last year, hey, I thought it was the same thing. I thought they were far better than the Devils. They took a 2-0 lead. So by no means are we calling the series over, because anything can happen, and we saw how close it could have come to being a tie game at the end of this game against Washington. But ultimately, watching this team, watching how far better they are than this Washington Capitals team, and seeing their strengths shine through, and having both of these Garden teams 2-0. When is the last time? I didn't check to see when it was the last time. I got to go see. Probably 94, if it ever happened before. I mean, do you remember what it was like? I know some of you, I heard Evan today yelling about people who are under 35 who have no memory of this. I know that. I know that anybody who's under 35 or under 40 years old has a hard time hearkening back to 1994 and listening to Mike and the Mad Dog live at every single game and hearing the stories, and I know I've heard them all because I worked on the show, but not that show, but with Mike. Oh, Dog hated to get on the plane to Vancouver. He threw a fit. Like, you've heard all the stories back and forth, all these playoff games, and now we are looking at two teams that have gone four consecutive nights, won home games at that Garden, in front of that Garden crowd. And the experience we've had. Now, yes, it's been a little bit more exciting with the Knicks than it is with the Rangers. A little more of a fait accompli. A little bit more of, hey, they're far better than this team. It would be a disaster if they lose. And a little bit of a, not such the excitement. And I mean, listen, this last night was not anything near the Knick game that gave you a moment you'll remember forever. But four nights in a row, back to back to back to back, watching these two teams as we prepare for an NFL draft, and we're going to get to it, because you know You know what I've got to say. Reports today about the Giants looking to trade up. How about that? How about that? But they love their quarterback. They don't have buyer's remorse. No, they're just going to move heaven and earth to move up to three. But that's okay. We'll get to that. But as we look to the NFL draft and see teams that we consistently see drafting 6th overall and 10th overall and 5th overall and 2nd overall, as we said goodbye yesterday to a 2nd overall pick, that was a disaster. Jets haven't made the playoffs in forever. Giants have been one of the worst franchises in the sport since winning the Super Bowl in 2011. The Knicks have been garbage for forever. The Rangers have been a major disappointment come playoff time. All of that fades away as we look at these two teams getting up 2-0 in these two series and feeling like we have a special spring, harkening back to 1994, and it feels good, and I'm going to bask in it. And now we got to wait a couple of days, which sucks. Why are so many days off in between? But we got the hockey story, we got the Knicks story, we got the baseball story. We'll get to the NFL draft in a bit, but obviously both baseball teams played yesterday. The Mets have now lost 3 in a row. And I sense that for the Met fans, and again, it just happened last night, West Coast game, I don't think the Met fans are panicking right now. I think the Met fans have been so enthused. Now, they haven't lost. This is the first series loss that they've had since dropping that 5th game to start the year. So they've done a really nice job. They've battled back. This offense has just gone ice cold, but I don't sense where I feel like a 3-game loss and the Yankee fans were ready to absolutely turn on this team and get vicious again with how much they hate it and the offense sucks and it's an impossible watch and it's the same thing as last year, just Soto and Judge is washed and they need to get rid of Glaber. I mean, that's what the Yankee fan has brought from a 3-game losing streak. I think the Met fan is still pretty excited about the way this team has played. But ultimately, offense has gone ice cold here, and something has happened. 2 out of the last 3 games, when you look around the landscape of baseball, is hard to find. Where 2 of the last 3 games, they have allowed a starting pitcher to go 8 shutout innings against them. In Tyler Glasnow and Logan Webb. Now, it's 2 of the best pitchers in the National League. It's 2 aces of their staffs, especially with the way Yamamoto's pitched. Glasnow is the ace pitcher of the Dodgers. But this offense has gone cold, particularly against the starting pitching. They've been outscored by a ton over these last 3 games. And despite getting still decent pitching performances, and Severino obviously was terrific through the first 4, some would say perfect. Eventually, he gave him a couple of runs, but really watching the team, it's one of the, you know, the offense comes and goes with this group. We've seen it for a couple of years. They are a streaky group. We know how streaky Lindor is. We've seen how streaky Alonso can be. Marte's really been consistent here throughout this, but eventually the offense is going to dry up a little bit. And what I'm looking forward to now, as we get bad news about DJ LeMahieu and the New York Yankees, JD Martinez hopefully is going to come back to with this team in hopefully Friday this weekend sometime, and they could use the injection of a little bit of offense. But for me, even watching the team right now, this is the first series they lost, and this is how quick baseball can turn. Right? We get hung up on this. We treat it like a football season. You know, we get so excited when they're doing well, so angry when they're doing poorly. But I think right now, I'm getting the feel for it. I would think that the Met fans right now aren't exactly too upset with the idea of off the big winning streak, getting shut down by Glasnow and losing the last game of that Dodger series, and then pretty much having 2 offensive no-shows to start this San Francisco series. I don't know if the panic mode is set in. If it has, shame on you. They're still a game over 500. I think this offense has shown a lot of grittiness and a lot of toughness over the last 3 weeks to get too upset about a 3-game stretch. The starting pitching has been fairly good. It doesn't give you a lot of innings. The bullpen's been great. You've had a couple storylines in that bullpen, and you know, Reed Garrett and obviously Diaz coming back, where you feel good about where the pitching is. But it's a three-game losing streak. The offense has gone cold, and it continues to be what it's been. And really what we're seeing from both of these teams is the Yankees do erupt a little bit in the first inning and then do nothing after that to get a victory in against Oakland. We'll get to them as well, and the bad news of DJ LeMahieu. But these teams are hot and cold. And these offenses, both of these offenses, have stretches where they look awful and stretches where they look dominant. And the Mets have just come off a long winning streak and a three-week stretch of this offense bouncing back every single time they give up runs. This offense never saying quit. Even the other day, they get to the point where, even though they're being shut down the entire game, they come up at the end of the game and bring at least the tying run to the plate. Like, they've battled here. They give you a little bit of fight. But this group that is just naturally hot and cold is going through a cold spell. And they've been completely shut down the last three games. And now you're looking at a big game tomorrow to determine what this West Coast trip looks like when you headed into L.A. and took the first two, and now you could be staring a 2-4 West Coast trip as opposed to a winning one. So that's how quickly the baseball season can change. But we are focused mainly to start the show on the Garden, on the Rangers, and the idea that these two teams are giving us something we haven't seen in forever. 877-337-6666. We'll get a little bit more into the baseball. We'll get a little more into the Yankees. We'll get a little more into the Mets. We'll talk about DJ LeMahieu. And we will get into what the Giants in particular plan on doing on Thursday, as we are 2 days away from the NFL draft.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it. At shortstop, Jeter. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
.225, McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. Rangers get a win. 4-3 over the Caps. Take a 2-0 lead. The Garden has seen four consecutive nights and four consecutive victories as both the Knicks and the Rangers are 2-0 in their series, heading on the road to go try and finish this off quickly, especially for the Rangers. We know we talked a lot about yesterday with the Knicks and what needs to change and what needs to continue if they want to win this series. And there's two camps to it. You know, there's the camp of, boy, can't expect to continue to win these games without Brunson being much better. Or there's the camp of, wow, they've won these two games and Brunson hasn't even gotten going yet. Which is very much like the Yankee season as well. Can't expect to keep winning if Judge is going to suck. Wow, look at this. They're 8 games over .500 and Judge hasn't even started hitting. And obviously yesterday they do explode a little bit in the first inning, which is nice to see because they haven't really scored. As dynamic as we thought this offensive team could be, or even if you thought there was going to be weaknesses at the bottom of the lineup, we expected the top of the order with Judge and Soto to be dynamic, and really, they haven't scored a lot of runs in the first inning over the course of the season. I believe this was only the fourth game that had first inning runs. So to see them open up a four spot, especially after Juan Soto makes a defensive mistake in the outfield and turns a single into an RBI double, to come back, bounce back, and score four runs in that first, including a Judge hit and a Stanton hit, and then obviously a Rizzo home run, which is huge for this team. I mean, if Anthony Rizzo could get going, it's going to change the offense, and he's shown no power whatsoever. So the idea that he hit a home run today off a pitcher who's really having a great year and then settled in and really shut down the Yankees after the fourth. I mean, after that four-run spot, excuse me, in the first. But the thing on Judge was, and today, I'll be honest with you, I know he had the big hit against Toronto to save that series from being a sweep. He gets a base hit down the line. The base hit in this game was almost, for me, the least exciting at-bat that he had of the game. Because, yes, he pulls one down the line. We've seen him do it a couple times. It does come through. It does score a run. But for me, the next couple of at-bats of getting extension and smoking the ball to right center field, that is starting to look like Judge. Those at-bats today, for me, today was the first day where I saw a full game of at-bats from Aaron Judge where I thought, okay, I think he's starting to come out of it. Previous, it's been one swing. Oh, he hits a long home run, 450 feet. Okay, maybe he'll snap out of it. Oh, he finally comes through in the clutch with a big hit down the line to win a game against Toronto. Hopefully that snaps him out of it. It's always been these one at-bats and the typical, oh, he hit one a mile, or oh, he came through in the clutch. Hopefully that'll snap him out of it. Instead of even though he made outs the rest of the way, he gave you consistent at-bats where he looked good taking pitches. He hit pitches hard going the opposite way, hit one almost out to right center field. The entire game seemed to be good at-bats where he looked like he was on everything. And that's what you're looking for. Yeah, you know, the cliche of a swinging bunt, hey, that might, you know, especially if you're 0 for something, if you're 0 for 11 or you're 1 for 15, you get that swinging bunt and it's like, hey, maybe that snaps him out of it, or a little looper. Oh, maybe that'll snap him out of it. We've had a couple of those with Aaron Judge, and it hasn't led to snapping him out of it. This was a full, consistent game of good, solid at-bats, even if he made outs, that I felt much better about. And then, obviously, the other thing out of this game is DJ LeMahieu, and we don't have the exact diagnosis just yet or what the issue is, but I've said this for a month, really, the whole season since he got hurt. I cannot count on DJ LeMahieu. I have no faith. I mean, I'm sure, I'm assuming he'll come back eventually, but we've seen him play through nagging foot injuries. I have no faith that DJ LeMahieu will give them anything this year. I had a lot of faith. I was expecting a lot out of DJ LeMahieu. Everybody told me how great he felt, how great he looked. It's the healthiest he's been in a few years. He was able to have a full offseason, blah, all the typical stuff you hear. And we know how good DJ LeMahieu can be when he is healthy. So I was expecting a bounce back year, not to the levels of 19 or 20 probably, but still somewhere around 300. But, you know, hopefully somewhere over 275, 280. I was hoping for that type of year from DJ LeMahieu, and now I have no faith in it, and now I don't even know when he's going to come back, as it's been a completely tumultuous thing since he got hurt, right? He gets hurt initially, oh, it seems like it's just a bruise, he's going to be out a while, now, oh, as he's ramping up, it's really starting to hurt him, now we do a new scan, oh, there is a little bit of a fracture in there, or an issue in there, so they got to give him more time, then he's going to have his first rehab assignment's going to be on a Friday. No, let's wait. We got a last scan. This scan showed not as much healing as we'd like, so we're going to push it back till Tuesday. Okay. We haven't seen as much healing as we liked on Friday, so we'll give it to him on. We'll let him play on Tuesday. Seems like a short turnaround. But anyway, he goes for the rehab assignment. It lasts one at-bat. Yesterday, he had one at-bat, strikeout, and left the game. And now with a sore foot, he's going to get reevaluated back in New York. I don't know when you're going to see DJ LeMahieu. I don't know if you're going to see DJ LeMahieu, and then when you see DJ LeMahieu, I have no idea what he's going to be. And honestly, I'm really not enthused about it, and I don't have any expectations. And thankfully, although he's starting to cool off a little bit now, I do think Oswaldo Cabrera's done a nice job. And Birdie, it sounds like, is going to be back relatively quickly, and I do like him even though he got off to a slow start. He wasn't playing a lot. None of the Yankees benches. Nobody on the Yankee bench is getting a lot of playing time right now. But I to get a bat at third base or to get an infield bat, it's not the hardest thing in the world come trade deadline. So I'm not overly concerned about it necessarily. But it's disappointing that DJ LeMahieu can't make it back. And I don't know when he's going to get back. And it was crappy news to get today. But ultimately, that's it. I'm considering DJ LeMahieu a non-factor for the season. And I would think the Yankees have to do the same. 877-337-6666. Let's get to the phones. Let's go to Matt in Long Island. What's up, Matt?
What's going on, Chris? Thanks for taking my call.
Good, buddy. Are you like in an empty arena on a speakerphone, or is there any way you can get like on the phone?
Yeah, is this better?
A little bit. What do you got?
I just want to talk about the Knicks. I'm
much like, better. Yes, go ahead. What's up?
Like, listen, this yesterday is what the Knicks are. The team are. They just saw in game. I mean, who they are, really. They never quit. Tough at the end. I mean, you can say bad calls all you want, but I saw a lot of momentum. And I just want to go with game three, going to Philly Thursday. But Brunson, he's got to get better. Because we're seeing consistent 30-point games from Maxey and Embiid. And like you said, their role players are going to get going at home. And
no doubt.
He's going to have to compete with that because they're not going away anytime soon, Philly. I meant, like, yesterday the game, I didn't expect them to really win, honestly, once Maxey hit the three.
Oh, no. I mean, of course. I don't think you're alone. When Maxey hits the three and they go up 4 points with a minute left, I certainly did not expect them to win the game, no.
Yeah,
That's what makes winning the game so special and yesterday so much fun, so much fun.
And totally, I mean, listen, like down the stretch, Brunson, he couldn't get anything going.
No,
I mean, Josh Hart. It's great that what he's doing, bring the team. He's the reason, but I don't know how he's going to drop 20 every game in the series. I know Maxey and Embiid are going to drop. They look great. Even if Embiid hurt, so in game three, like it's not like the Knicks. It's in Philly's direction, I should say.
Yeah, well, I mean,
maybe not the direction, but like,
well, the series isn't in the direction. Game three, maybe. And let's see, let's take a quick look. I didn't take a look to see who will be favored in the game. Philly by 4.5. So, yeah, Philly's favored 4.5. The game, I mean, I would think, obviously, they're favored. People are going to expect Philadelphia to win. And I understand why. And you're right. Things have to change. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Like, I don't think anybody thinks that you can go through this series with Brunson being a zero. I mean, there's a chance they've won two games without it. And they are tough, and they are consistent in their role players, and they do have multiple guys who could score, at least shoot a little bit. They've gotten, the hustle plays. They're tougher. I think they're mentally tougher. I think they're physically tougher. I think they're better conditioned. I think they have better and more role players. But it is tough to get through a series when the other team, when the two best players on the court are on the other team. And that's part of what we've gone through here. That's what's made these two games special, is how they've been able to still win it with getting nothing from Brunson. But that when you say that, you inherently imply that Brunson won't be a nothing for forever. I mean, I don't think anyone expects the Knicks to get through this series and certainly any next series. I know the Pacers evened up the series last night against Milwaukee. I don't know how you could expect to get through any significant level of the NBA playoffs as a Knicks fan, thinking Brunson's going to play the way he played in these first two games. He's shooting under 30%. That's not going to happen. And if you believe if you believe his play is going to continue like this, then yeah, you're someone who thinks Philadelphia can get back into the series real quick. Because I'll tell you right now, if he shoots under 30% for the next two games in Philadelphia, I think it's going to be very difficult to win. Does he have to drop 45? No. But he has to find a shot better than he found it in the first two games. I don't think there's any doubt. But I think there's a level of optimism that, one, Philadelphia is mentally weak. Philadelphia complaining, Philadelphia filing grievances, Philadelphia's head coach whining about timeouts. I think even if you watch the video of the guarantee, you could barely look up. Like, it just looks all fake tough guy to me. The complaints, the guarantee, all of it. I think Philadelphia is shot and mentally weak. I think the Knicks are far more mentally strong. I think they're physically more strong, other than Embiid, who's a monster. I think they're tougher. I think they're better coached. I think they're better conditioned. And I think if these games are anywhere close to being, close games in the last few minutes, the Knicks are the better team in that situation, and I would trust them over Philadelphia. But going into Philly, if Brunson's going to play like this, it might be a 15-point game with 2 minutes left. That's the issue. That's the issue for me. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a catch 22. We're all excited. We're all pumped up. I'm pumped up. Four straight games, four straight wins. The Garden's rocking like it hasn't in a long time. The Rangers are a legitimate cup threat. The Knicks have won two games that you could argue they could have lost both, and the Knicks and the Rangers have dominated their first two games against the team they're supposed to dominate. So, I mean, it feels good. But I don't think anybody expects the Knicks to get through this series easily or get anywhere where we hope they can go without Brunson being Brunson. That's part of who they are. That's part of what got them there. So, I mean, we'll see, but yes, of course, things need to change. There is a catch-22 to this. I don't think it's outrageous to say that. I don't think it's a raining on parades. I don't think it's being negative, not embracing this. You can be excited. You can be happy. You can point out the fact that this team is tough and all the things I've said and how well the role players have played and the different how important Josh Hart can be, the unbelievable heroics of Hartenstein at the end of that game and how impressive he's been and all that. You could say all those things and still say Brunson needs to be the best player on the court for the Knicks. Otherwise, it's going to be tough. Those all can be in the same argument. That's what needs to happen. 877-337-6666. As I'm watching the highlights from this Ranger game last night. And, you know, it was a close game. It's obviously 1-0 Capitals. Rangers get two. Caps tied up at two. But, I mean, it just felt like any time. And the power play is so good. I mean, that's really what... Like, as long if they continue, and we talked about it going into this series, if they can keep up their power play, and that's the fear. The fear is they won't. The fear is how do they continue to score when the power play isn't there? But so far, it's been there. And if it's going to be there, if it's going to be this dynamic, they're tough to beat because they're better at it than any team in the NHL. That's what their strength has been, both with the power play and the PK. And last night we saw one of the more pretty shorthanded goals you'll ever see with just incredible passing. Quick, sharp, on-target passing that leads to a Miller goal that was just perfect. They do allow a power play goal to make it 4-3, and we sweat it out the last 2 minutes with the 6-on-5, but ultimately, you never felt like they were losing this game, never. You never felt like they were losing this game. They're just better in every way. They're too fast, and Ovechkin is just, I mean, he gives up the turnover that leads to the shorthanded goal. He's been awful. It just they don't have it. They don't have it, and this series needs to be quick. If the Rangers find themselves in a game 6 or 7, that will be a telltale sign for me. That this could get real tricky moving forward. They need to get through this series quickly. And hopefully the Islanders can get off the deck and at least for us Ranger fans, at the very least, make this a series for Carolina. Now, it's been a series in the first two games. They've been very close, very hard fought. Unfortunately, the Islanders have come on the opposite side of both of them. So if the Islanders, who are coming home, who have played well, who have given this Carolina team that's favored to win the cup everything it could possibly want. Like they have pushed them to the limits, to the point they need heroics to come back and win game two. If they could make this series a long series and the Rangers can play a quick series, then whoever comes out of that round, whether it's the Islanders miraculously or Carolina, as long as it's a long, hard series, you feel like maybe the Rangers could have an advantage. That's what we're rooting for. Let's go, Islanders.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Here we go. First pitch time, 8:31. And Jeter swings. It's a high drive to left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Derek Jeter hits a first ball fastball deep in the bleachers in left field. And on the first pitch of the game, the Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, McMonagle here with you at 248-877-337-6666. So, you know, I like to talk about trailers, right? Movie trailers. I do the Daddy, Why Are You Still on the Potty segment a lot about how I steal time in the bathroom and hide from my family when I need just a few minutes, and I watch a lot of movie trailers. Well, I saw that a trailer dropped for something that I want to tell you I have absolutely no interest in. I don't care about it. I won't watch this trailer. I won't click on it. It looks stupid just from the stupid picture of it. I'm not going to watch it when it comes out. I have zero interest in the roast of Tom Brady. Zero. Who cares? Who cares about roasting Tom Brady? I have zero interest. None. Jokes about what? Like, honestly. Jokes about his diet. Jokes about his divorce. Jokes about how many championships he's got. I don't care. I am so sick and tired of Tom Brady. I didn't even mention the story about that stupid interview he gave while getting a haircut, where he brings up the idea he's open. You never know if someone called him mid-season with an injury to their quarterback. You never know. I'm so tired of Tom Brady. You have no idea. And so, no, I don't care about this roast like it's the biggest roast in the history of roasts. Roast actual celebrities. Not this doofus. Oh, you retired? Then you unretired? I don't know. They'll probably, you know, there'll be some funny jokes or whatever, but most of the time, I'll be laughing how they roast everybody else on the dais. I don't even care. I dislike Tom Brady so much, I don't even care to see him get made fun of. I don't care. The roast of Tom Brady. Who says you deserve a roast? Go play another golf tournament that no one will watch. I don't care. I can't wait. And now he's going to be with us every single week doing television games. I'm going to have to hear from Tom Brady. And you know what really bothers me? You know what really bothers me? I think he's probably going to be really good at it. I'm hoping he's terrible. I'm hoping he falls completely on his face, and everybody who and the Andrew Marchands of the world are writing story after story about how he screwed what's his name out of the main gig on Fox. I'm hoping that's the story week after week, is that Olsen should still be the guy. Tom Brady sucks, but it won't be. It won't be. He'll be great at it. The roast will be hilarious. So sick of Tom Brady, man. Sick of him. The roast of Tom. They have to have a trailer for the roast of Tom Brady. What? Drives me nuts. 877-337-6666. And everyone says to me, like, but you're a Giant fan. And typically I am like this. I've gone on it where every time the Met-Yankee dynamic comes up, I go, the Mets never caused me grief. So I'm typically like that. I agree. And Tom Brady, like even during the regular season for the most part, the Giants have had somewhat success. And the most memorable loss at the hands of Tom Brady and the Patriots is one that people consider the beginning of their Super Bowl run. Even the time he beat them, it's viewed as the beginning of that great Super Bowl run. And it's viewed with a positive light, that loss. You can't even get mad at that loss. It spurned a championship. Spurred a championship. I always throw the N in there. Spurred a championship. And yet still, I hate the man. I don't know why. I really don't know. I guess I'm exhausted by him. And I think it boils down to the fact that while I know, and I can't argue it any longer, the amount of championships and then really leaving Bill Belichick and going to the Bucs and winning a Super Bowl his first year cements it. I know it does. I don't think he's the best quarterback to ever play. Like, I just don't. He's the best winner. But he gets so much love. Like, he is the least talented player to be considered the best at their sport. Like, Jordan is far better. Wayne Gretzky, why we even have the conversation. Gretzky is so much better. Babe Ruth or whomever else you want to say. The early 2000s, Barry Bonds, whatever baseball player, far better. He's the greatest winner. But it gets rubbed in your face, and every single AFC championship game, year after year, every single Super Bowl, year after year, I'm tired of it. I don't even like, I kind of don't like Belichick either, but if he takes over the Giants, I'll have to just, his Giant connection is what makes it tolerable for me. And if the Giants are stupid enough to not draft a quarterback, and if they do have a miserable season, and they do fire Dable and Shane, I'll be screaming for Belichick like everybody else. 877-337-6666. Mike and Merrick. What's up, Mike? How about them Rangers?
How about those Rangers?
That's right. Two up, two down. Another 14 to the cup, baby. Let's go.
Right. And I have to get you going early. I know you just say you don't like Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if Brady goes to the Giants?
No. Why would that ever happen? Mike, why would you just put that in my mind, Mike? Why?
I just wanted to test you.
No. No, yeah. Don't test me. I'm not taking that test. My Scantron, the machine won't read my Scantron.
I just want to get you off that habit.
No, well, I don't like Tom Brady. I don't like him. I don't have to like him.
Okay.
But how about those Rangers?
How about those Rangers?
What was your favorite? For me, it was the shorthanded goal, the game winner. What an incredible passing display. They're just so talented, Mike.
I know. And the Rangers, I'm going to say this again.
Yes.
Rangers will play Carolina the second round.
Yes.
And we're going to beat Carolina.
They're going to beat Carolina. Nothing would be finer than to beat up Carolina in the morning.
At Madison Square Garden.
That's right. Where we are undefeated, Mike. Undefeated at the Garden, 4-for-4. Back to back to back to back. I mean, when's the last time that happened? I mean, you have to go. I remember 94. I was very young. I'm 9 years old in the spring of 94. I remember all of it. I remember the white Bronco. I remember every night was another playoff game. I think me and my dad listened to Mike and the Mad Dog a little bit. I did not listen to them after post games. I know they were doing all those. I think they were doing after post games. I know they were doing after post games for the 96 World Series. I didn't listen to them in the post games of those shows either. I think they would do nights occasionally in 94 after Knicks and Ranger games. I'm not positive on that. I just said it and then I realized maybe I'm thinking of the 96 World Series. But I know they were live at all those shows before games. They were talking to Pat Riley every day before every game. It was just that 94, knowing what they were and knowing how good both teams were, and obviously no Jordan to be in their way with the Knicks, the Rangers were the best team in hockey, and Messier, and just everything about that time. And hopefully, listen, 4-for-4 is not 94. They've got a lot more to do. But they're off to a good start. And the idea that both of these teams, and I'm lucky enough right now, at least, you know, over the last 25 years, that has not been the case. But right now, I'm lucky enough to be a Knick and Ranger fan. And right now, this is about as good as it gets this time of year. I mean, there is nothing better than these games. And particularly, I mean, right now, the style that the Knicks, like, if you think about it, it's one thing. Like, I know a lot of guys, and maybe we'll do a little bit more on the NBA playoffs overall as Indiana, if we're looking ahead, Indiana tied up the series against Milwaukee 125-108 last night. But I know a lot of people don't love the style of the NBA when we talk about 1994 and we talk about the physical nature of those teams and the way they played it in the 90s. And we're hearkening back, especially as they show all the guys on the sidelines. And I'm pretty sure John Starks almost took a shot the other night. I mean, he's right there. I thought he was going to go for a layup. He's on the floor. So, like, I know we love that style of play, but right now the brand of basketball the Knicks are playing is so much fun to watch. And the intensity. And this is why I get on, like, I have a lot of, especially around the tournament, me and my buddies get into it. I have a couple of buddies that, you know, oh, college basketball is so much better, the defensive intensity, blah, blah. The NBA playoffs, they play defense. All right, yeah, over the course of 82, sure. Are there nights where, you know, the defensive intensity lacks? Sure. I get you. But right now, this is as good as basketball gets for me. And watching the style of play in particular that the Knicks play and these series to go along with the Rangers right now, I mean, and plus playoff hockey is it elevates, especially in this town, especially the way we talk, and if you're a casual hockey fan. Like, I don't think there's another sport. I mean, baseball is my favorite, and I do think the idea of a lot of the, and Francesa used to say this, and I would always agree with him. I think he's 100% spot on. The same thing, I think hockey has the same thing. But the same things that would make a sport dull or, all right, who cares in July? You know, an eight or nine pitch at bat in the middle of a game in July, it's like, would you just put the ball in play already? I got to go to the bathroom or whatever. But in the playoffs, it's a buildup for every pitch. And it's like this buildup of anticipation. And the same thing in hockey. It's just for a sport that a lot of us here, and we, you know, the complaints from Ranger fans and hockey fans, we don't talk it here. You know, the casual fan that just glances at hockey as the season goes along. I mean, you can't help but just be enthralled in these playoff games because the nature of just the puck doing anything and how tight all of these games are. Like, the Rangers dominated that hockey game. It's 4-3 with 2 minutes and it's 6-on-5 and you're thinking, they might blow this thing. Like, it's just the best. I love playoff hockey. So the idea that we have these two teams playing the two brands of playoff sports right now to be 4-0 in these first four games, bringing this excitement to the Garden. I mean, this is as good as it gets. And we haven't seen it. It hasn't felt like this, at least. I don't know if we've seen it. The Rangers have been in the playoffs so many times, and the Knicks were in the playoffs in 13 and everything. So we've had this moment where both teams had somewhat of high expectations and were playing in these series, but it hasn't felt like this, especially off the win the other night at the Garden with the Knicks. I mean, it's just, right now it's at an all-time fever pitch, and I love it. 877-337-6666. All right, more on the baseball, more on the Knicks and Rangers, but also I saw something today, and I didn't think it's not completely new, and we've heard thoughts of this before, but I'm starting to think my dreams might come true. And we are 2 days away from it.